to Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Wes Goldberg, host of Locked On Warriors, here with Dave Vermeil, the host of Locked On Heat. Today's episode of Locked On NBA is brought to you by Built Bar, the best tasting low-carb protein bar. The promo code Locked On gets you $10 off of your first box of Built Bars at builtbar.com. Packed show today. We're going to talk about some changes to the EuroLeague season in that it will not exist. And David and I are going to go over maybe our next 10-part documentary that we want to watch, if we could, now that The Last Dance is over. But I wanted to start here, David, because reports are now that the NBA is moving toward resuming its regular season in mid to late July. And there's a lot of different ways that this could look. A lot of reports out there with now that the league is talking about ways it can resume its season. Do they go straight to the playoffs? Do they start with a miniature regular season and go into the playoffs? Do they do a tournament to determine wild card teams and the last two teams in the postseason? But that's all been one of the things I want to talk about that came out on Monday is that it could just, when they do resume the playoffs, however they get there, they could reseed it from seeds 1 through 16. So instead of having an Eastern Conference and a Western Conference playoff, you would just have all 16 seeds in one major playoff tournament. And that makes a lot of sense, David, because like if the whole thing is in Disney World, the only reason we have conferences is to, you know, facilitate travel. But if they're all in Disney World, then there's no traveling. So you might as well do seeds 1 through 16. I love this idea.
Yeah, the travel aspect of it, I think, certainly makes much more interesting. And you're right. It would be like there's no previous history. There's no playoff beef between some of these teams. Like you're looking at a Lakers-Nets matchup potentially, or a Heat-Thunder, and their only relationship is dating back to the 2012 finals. But so that makes it much more of a curiosity, in my opinion. Like you're looking at these teams and you're saying, man, like I've never seen what it's like for these two teams to face each other in the playoffs. So none of the same old narratives on top of all the other irregularities regarding this potential offseason. It's just, I mean, I do really like the idea also. It's just, there's part of me that just kind of feels like, well, it just feels so atypical from what we're used to. But I mean, so much of this whole season and its potential conclusion remains up in the air. So why not change things around and make things a little bit interesting? And you're absolutely right. If you're all going to be in the same location anyway, let's make it more interesting. Let's make it a potential challenge here for new teams and give them the opportunity. I mean, I really do like the idea. I think it's very interesting. And again, those matchups are fascinating to me.
And look, there's no secret that the NBA has been thinking about this general idea anyway, that you still have your conferences, but once the postseason comes, there's been some grassroots momentum to just turn the playoffs into this anyway, where you just seed group. And that way you sort of eliminate that Western Conference versus Eastern Conference bias. You know, everybody says the Western Conference is so much better, which it has been historically, but that would be I'm still not there yet, but this is a good way to experiment with it, at least, right? And to me, like, it is an interesting, like, it's very atypical. You would have all these weird cross matchups that to me would be the most interesting part of a first round. We should just say if the playoffs started today, for example, so if they don't do a regular season, they just take the 16 teams left, the top 16 teams, I should say, and group them and seed them in a playoff tournament. It would be the Bucks versus the Magic in round one. These would be the matchups. Bucks versus the Magic, the Lakers versus the Brooklyn Nets, which actually could be interesting if Kyrie Irving's playing, because it would be LeBron versus Kyrie. Maybe even Kevin Durant gets involved. That would be a whole other level of intrigue. The Raptors versus the Grizzlies, Clippers versus the Mavericks, Celtics versus the 76ers, Nuggets versus the Pacers, Jazz versus Rockets, and Heat versus Thunder. And I'll say it again, but those cross-conference matchups are the most interesting to me, especially when you look at a team like Heat Thunder would be a really good series, I think. I know that it's close home to you. So of those matchups, which one would you be most interested in?
I think the Celtics-Sixers one, I mean, maybe that's a little dry considering they're both in the Eastern Conference anyway, but I think that would be a pretty exciting matchup.
Obviously, because Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid would ostensibly be healthy. That was right. What would make that interesting, because the Celtics would be a 5 seed in this situation, and the Sixers would be a 12 seed, right? Because they were so bad at the end of the regular season. Like, if they just resume this, you could have a 12 upset of 5, And that's certainly possible in that situation.
Yeah, and then they'd face potentially the winner of the Clippers-Mavericks matchup, which would probably be the Clippers if they're at full health too. And so, I mean, that would be a great matchup. I mean, there's so many different interesting ones here. I mean, the Lakers-Nets one. I mean, the possibility of getting Kyrie and Kevin Durant there, as unlikely as that is, at least Durant anyway, I think he's been shut down pretty effectively for the remainder of whatever season takes place there. But right. I'm curious, though. Like, we've kind of glossed over it. Do you feel it's unfair to those teams, the other 14 teams that aren't in the playoff hunt, whether or not they should be included, even whether it's a play-in tournament or something along those lines? I know so much of this decision-making process is about money anyway, and I know it's about restoring the regional sports network contracts and getting recouping some of the money that you may have lost if you don't play out the rest of the regular season. But I'm curious your take on it, because you cover the Warriors, obviously out of the playoff race now. Would you want to see them play out five meaningless games, or do you feel like it's unimportant? I know maybe it's a little different from... I think the only team that has an actual stake in it that isn't in the playoffs would probably be New Orleans. I don't know if there's another team in the Eastern Conference that's like right there on the Magic, which could close out and maybe get the eighth seed in the Eastern Conference. But
if they extend that wild card plan, maybe they add a Portland to the mix too. That would obviously like to make the playoffs after going to the Western Conference Finals last year. They don't want to miss out the playoffs.
Good point.
Completely. But if you're the NBA, you definitely want to see New Orleans over there over Orlando, right? Like, you want to see Zion Williamson versus Giannis in that first round matchup. You don't, instead of Giannis versus who cares, right? So I think that
although the Magic would be the hometown favorites, right? And playing at the worldwide World of Sports.
Could they
with no crowd anyway? With no crowd,
as the only team with home court advantage, could they upset the Bucks? Maybe.
Yeah.
No. I would like actually for them to just go right to the playoffs. I think just selfishly, I would like to cover some of these games, and if the Warriors are even playing five games in Disney World, I would prefer that than versus not going to Disney World at all to cover this thing. But I do think the better, like, my subjective, selfish answer. Objectively, I think they should just go right to the postseason. I really don't see the need to have these teams play. I get it, like, you can recoup some money or whatever, but you're still not going to be making any money from fans, which is really the money that they're losing. It would be for the TV networks. It wouldn't be for the teams or the NBA. It really wouldn't. Maybe you could pay some of these players for five extra games, but it seems like they've been really loose with all that stuff anyway, so I don't know how much of a consideration that actually is. Or if the regular season comes out, you just pay out people. So I think the main concern for these teams that are no longer playing would just be the loss of gate revenue, which is not going to be recouped either way. So I think they should really go back straight to the playoffs. And, Brian Windhorst went on ESPN on Monday and said that he thinks that that's the most likely scenario, that they would just go straight to the postseason. It makes the most sense to do it that way.
Yeah, no doubt. I think, I was thinking about it, and you're absolutely right. Even as you're talking about this, like, my feeling is that everybody should get the opportunity to play and play it out. But for what? I mean, you're risking their health. It's going to be such a weird jumpstart trying to restart everything, in such a shortened time frame here for these players. Like, what's the incentive for like those teams to come back? I mean, with the exception of maybe those few teams potentially in the eighth seed hunt, like, there's no real appeal to jumpstart this. Now, how about that though? I mean, would you do like a wild card game? Is it worth it to go through a couple weeks of training camp to be a potential wild card like New Orleans and or Portland?
That's a great question. I think that I would like the wild card portion to be part of this. First of all, it adds some intrigue immediately. Not that they need it because it's sports coming back,
sure.
But it would add some, like I said, going back to what, like, this is an opportunity for Adam Silver and for the NBA to sort of experiment with a lot of different things. And it makes a lot of sense for them just to go ahead and experiment with this wild card format that we know that they have been thinking about for a little bit. Let's talk about what that would look like. But first, the world of protein bars is being rebuilt, and it's being done by Built Bar. This is the best tasting protein bar I've ever had. It's a protein bar covered in 100% real chocolate. It's absolutely delicious with 16 amazing flavors. That's how many seeds there are going to be in the playoffs. Built Bar tastes like a candy bar while delivering fewer sugars and fewer carbs, making it better tasting and better for you than any of the competitors. With delicious flavors like mint brownie, raspberry chocolate cream, and toffee almond, Built Bar is like a cheat code for health-conscious men and women everywhere. These bars are low calorie, they're low sugar, while also being high in protein and fiber, making them perfect for any of these low carb diets that you might be on. David, I traveled to South Florida recently. I've been here for like 3 weeks, and I brought one Built Bar with me for the plane, and I regret only bringing one of them. I've been really missing them. I've got like, you know, still a half box left in my apartment in San Francisco. I've literally thought about just ordering them for my time here in Florida. I just haven't done it yet, but I probably should have.
Yeah, I mean, you know, getting them delivered there, it's easy enough to do, but you're absolutely right. I mean, they're so convenient, and my wife has gone through the whole box that we had shipped to us so that we could try out some of these flavors for her.
You sound a little snack. The way you ordered that, you sound a little bitter. Like your wife ate all of them. Did you get any of them?
I had some of them. I had to try some of them. I told her, look, can I at least try some of the product I'm endorsing here? I love the bars, but for her, it's just so convenient as she's still going out to work as a healthcare professional. She's still going out to work regularly. And so for her, it's just been a great snack. It's so hard to just kind of put together a meal, especially with our limited time with a toddler and everything else. And the Built Bars are just a great snack to keep her going, to keep her, you know, on her feet and energized and feeling good and healthy about herself. So, I mean, it's been such a convenient thing for her. And so, yes, there is a little bit of jealousy there, but not too much, because we'll probably just wind up reordering a mix of our favorite flavors too. And I think that's one of the most appealing things, is that you can mix and match all sorts of different flavors. She likes mint chocolate. I think that's a terrible combination, but there are so many other flavors there. It makes me happy that we can just get a combination of different flavors so that we're both satisfied.
You get a half a box of mint chocolate for her, half a box of the good flavors for you, and you're good to go. And how you do it? You go to builtbar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON, and get $10 off your first order. Again, promo code LOCKEDON, one word, LOCKEDON, for $10 off at builtbar.com. All right, David, let's talk about what this is really going to look like, how this might play out, and if it's even fair, because look, one of the things that Adam Silver has reportedly been saying on these conference calls with the whole league, and I guess they're going to have another one on Friday, it sounds like, and they want to have this sort of established within the next couple of weeks, it sounds like. But one of the things he's reportedly said is, like, there's no great options. This is not going to be perfectly fair across the board. A lot of these teams, especially ones that are not in the postseason, are going to lose money. Maybe they do a revenue split regardless, which is, I imagine, how it would look. That's just a guess. That no matter what, whatever money that the NBA brings in, you do a revenue split across the board for all the teams, even if they're not in the postseason. That seems like a fair thing to do, especially with all the loss of revenue. But as far as just a competitive standpoint, you were talking about doing a wild card play-in. If it's between, let's say, the Magic, the Brooklyn Nets, let's say you do a four-team playoff between the Magic, the Brooklyn Nets, the New Orleans Pelicans, and the Portland Trail Blazers. That to me makes a lot of sense. And then you just you do two games. You do like Orlando versus New Orleans, and then Brooklyn versus Portland, or however you want to do it. And then the winner of those two, I don't know, like a three-game series could just go into the playoffs. That to me would make a lot of sense. And you can still give some of these other teams some time to go through an extended training camp and then get into playoff shape.
Yeah, I like that idea. I mean, I was wondering if you could do like maybe even a 16 tournament and open it up for Sacramento and San Antonio too. I mean, give them a chance to kind of get in there. I know the Spurs would probably want to. I'm sure the Kings would love the opportunity to get into the playoffs also. So, and you never know, in this kind of weird condensed format, you can get some interesting options there. I'm not sure how that would play out as far as six teams. They'd all have to face each other in some kind of short round robin tournament, but it would make a lot of sense. And then the winner would move past and get the 7th and 8th, or I guess the 15th and 16th seed in the playoff seedings there. So that would be an interesting option to open it up so you can get some teams that haven't tasted the playoffs in quite some time, or for like the Trailblazers, a team that's been in the playoffs so often, and as you pointed out, even been in the Western Conference Finals just last year. It's kind of weird to have such a dramatic fall off, and I know they've had some trades and injuries and things of that sort, but either way, it's I think they should at least get the opportunity to do so, or maybe at least reach out to these teams and find out whether or not the players want this opportunity. And maybe that's just an odd thing for the players to be able to decide this future, but they're the ones that are going to be signing up for this, you know, kind of bubble situation here. And I mean, I feel like one of the few national reporters that's actually covered anything at the ESPN Wide World of Sports, like having covered the Junior NBA Global Championship over the last couple seasons, the inaugural season a couple years ago and this past one in July. Like, I know what it's like to be in that facility and covering multiple games at once. It can be pretty hectic, and you have certainly enough space there for people to practice and things to go on all the time there. But for the players, I mean, they're going to be on this sprawling Disney World campus, and they can't leave that. Obviously, that's what's been discussed. And that's going to be, you know, obviously very strange, very atypical, everything that you can consider as far as just being, you know, not trapped, but, you know, centralized in this one place. And so it's, I think the players should have a vote as to whether or not they want to even be part of this.
And it's a, that's another argument to be made for just sort of making this as short and quick as possible, right? Because you don't want these, like, these players aren't going to want to be quarantined forever. Like, LeBron obviously has a lot of reasons to want to play this tournament, not just cancel the entire season outright. But then again, like, does he want to be away from his family? Do these guys want to be locked in Orlando for, you know, 2 months? Because the playoffs typically take 2 months. And now what you're going to do, obviously, is you probably have to play, you know, you're not going to have 2 games or 2 days separating games because you're not going to have to travel from one city to the other one, right? So it's going to be every other day. Maybe you play a back-to-back at some point in each series, just to sort of hasten this thing up. It sounds like they're still going to want to do a 7-game series, which I still think makes the most sense, just because you sell the playoff package to these networks. And so you probably want to probably get as close to that original package that you sold in the first place that you possibly can get to. My question is this going to create like a weird is this going to create like weird upsets or something where these teams that had earned home court advantage aren't going to have it? They're going to be in this strange new Orlando bubble city thing. It's going to be really weird. I think some of the veteran players might do, they may fare better in front of playing in a game without any fans, because we know that these players want fans there. And I think some of the young players who aren't, I don't know, maybe they rely on that sort of energy a little bit more than the veteran players who maybe treat this more like a profession and a job. Like, I'm not worried about LeBron James getting up for a game regardless of fans. I am a little worried about the young players in these postseason settings about being able to muster the energy, weirdly enough. It sounds ironic, I think, but I think a lot of those guys rely on that, and it might be a really surreal experience for them. So if you have these young teams that are really high seeds, then they may, like the Celtics, for example, are a young team. Will they be able to function in front of an arena without fans? I don't know. But to go back to your original question, like, I do think that some of the teams that are not in the playoffs just want to punt. Like, I know the Warriors, even if they come back, like Steph Curry, Draymond Green, they're not playing. They have no reason to play. Like, I'm not even sure you're going to get Steve Kerr to drive back from San Diego at this point. Like, I don't know what they're going to do. So, but if you're a team that can actually make the playoffs, like San Antonio or Sacramento or Portland, like that, then obviously I think they're going to want to play just for the chance to do it. But if you got no shot at making the, like, unless, if, as long as there's, if they just do 5 games just for fun that have no bearing, like, why would you want to risk lottery position? Why would you want to risk the health of these guys? I don't think those guys are going to want to play. And I think what you're going to end up getting is just sort of like souped up summer league thing with a lot of those teams.
Yeah, I mean, and part of the whole environment kind of lends itself to that, too, without the crowd noise and everything else. And you brought up a really good point. I hadn't even considered that, even in context of, like, the Heat. And to go back to one of the matchups that we talked about in the first segment, which is the Celtics-Sixers. Like, the Sixers are such a good home team, and despite their veteran presence, they're very bad on the road. I wonder how that would impact them, you know, playing in this kind of situation here, playing in the Walt Disney World bubble. And so we've never seen anything like it. What ultimately it comes down to for me is that I'm just like, I'm wrapping my mind around all these possibilities, and I don't even know, like this wasn't even a possibility last week. Yeah. We'd heard the rumblings and certainly, you know, Keith Smith from Yahoo had proposed it, at least the most public proposal that we had seen. And so, you know, you kind of start to think about it. And again, like I said, since I'd covered a tournament there, I know kind of what it entails, but I mean, I just didn't really think it was realistic. And then you start to hear discussions that Vegas is in the running too, and whether or not you're going to split some teams between one facility and the other. And it's just, and now all of a sudden,
I thought that's
the league,
what they were going to do, but I think this makes more sense. I thought they were going to do a Western Conference playoff and an Eastern Conference playoff split between Vegas and Orlando. But this does make more sense to just do it all in one spot, right?
Yeah, you can control every aspect here. And I think that's the whole thing, is that you want some kind of consistency. I mean, I've used this point in previous podcasts with you, but I mean, one of the things that I always learn in PR is having a consistency of a message. And I think you can control that so much more effectively when you're in one centralized location. Like, again, that there's this pre-existing relationship between NBA folks and NBA PR and their executives and the Disney team, understanding what it takes to provide food and housing and everything else. It just makes for so much more of a synergistic relationship that's already pre-existing, that why would you go out of that way? Like, yes, something exists to that point was, you know, Las Vegas Summer League, but not to the same level that it already exists with, you know, Disney, who happens to own ESPN and you know, ABC. And so it's a natural transition to have all these games already broadcast on those networks anyway. So that makes a whole lot of sense, too.
I want to end this segment on with this question of the seeded 1 through 16 teams. I'll just go over them again. The Bucks, the Lakers, the Raptors, the Clippers, the Celtics, Nuggets, Jazz, Heat, Thunder, Rockets, Pacers, Sixers, Mavericks, Grizzlies, Nets, Magic. Of those 16 teams, which team benefits the most without having a home court advantage? Of no home court advantage existing, which one of those teams benefits the most?
I'll give you my answer first.
I'll tell you then the Clippers. I think it's going to be the Clippers because going into the postseason, I thought they would have the biggest disadvantage. Like, they would almost have no home court advantage if they were playing the Lakers, which, if it's Lakers Clippers in the Western Conference Finals, which it definitely could have been because that's your one seed and your two seed. Even if the Clippers, like, the Lakers were the one seed, but even like the Clippers quote unquote home games during that series would have been Lakers home games. They would have had no home court advantage for an entire series, which is one of the reasons why I always picked the Lakers to come out of the West over the Clippers, because they would have to go through each other ostensibly at some point anyway. So without having that, I think the Clippers benefit the most.
That's a really good point. I had not considered that, and that makes a whole heck of a lot of sense. I will piggyback on that somewhat unfairly, but I think you're right. Like, just thinking about that dynamic of what it's like to have Lakers fans in the building outnumbering whatever Clippers fans might be in attendance by like a 4-5-1 ratio. I mean, there would be no home court advantage there.
No, it's like 25,000 Laker fans and Billy Crystal.
Who's certainly loud enough to make a difference for the Clippers. But, you know, does he get credentialed to cover the tournament, though? I think that's the big question.
If he gets a credential to be there and I don't, I'm going to be really upset. All right, let's get out of this segment. We'll talk about the EuroLeague canceling its season and what documentary we want to see next coming back. This is Locked On NBA. Okay, David, so before we get to our ideas for the documentary we want to see next, we should just cover this. It's not the NBA, but it's basketball related. The EuroLeague has officially canceled its season outright. Now, I think the difference between the EuroLeague and the NBA, it's look, this is an obvious one, right? Like, the EuroLeague is a league of many different countries. There's a lot of inter-country travel and things like that. It just never seemed like a realistic thing for them to return at all. And so when this first happened, I think a lot of people looked at that as maybe an indictment on if the NBA could come back. But I think the two things are wholly unrelated. It would have been the EuroLeague was coming back, right? Like, this was just a done deal, I think, with the way that this pandemic has occurred.
Yeah, I mean, going back to what I talked about in the previous segment, it's like, it would have been so impossible to control all these different factors. And there are so many different ones that you have to take into consideration. You brought up travel, you brought up, I mean, just connections to the outside world. You can't have one central location the way you can in the NBA. You can't control all the different partners. You can't ensure the safety of any participants. And I think that's paramount. Like, the statement that they issued, you know, prioritizes the safety of the players and all participants, coaches, et cetera. And so you have to take that into consideration that they can't control that when you have so many different teams from all these different countries traveling in so many different ways. I mean, it makes things so much more impossible to regulate. And so that's why the NBA current proposal seems like it could potentially work so much more effectively than EuroLeague would.
And I think the one way this does affect the NBA, if at all, is just you get a little fewer eyes and fewer game tape on maybe some of these prospects that may have been participating in the rest of this league or a potential postseason. You're just not going to get extra game tape on them. You're not going to be able to increase the sample size on those games, on those guys. But, you know, whatever. Like, that's kind of an issue for all the prospects right now. So it's not that big of a deal. All right, let's move on, because we've been covering The Last Dance every Tuesday on this show, and this is our first Tuesday having not done it since the last dance started. It's over now. There's no talk, I don't think, of another 10-part documentary coming out anytime soon. But I like the format, actually. I like that Sunday night kind of winding down your weekend, getting in front of your TV for a couple hours and watching this thing. If there were to be another 10-part documentary released, what would you want the topic to be on?
You know, I miss it, first and foremost. I do miss The Last Dance. Like, I felt like this past weekend felt a little bit empty there. Just, again, couldn't wind down, couldn't look forward to it. And sure, it gave us plenty of content to tweet and talk about on podcasts. But yeah, as far as the next potential topic, it's tricky, right? Because although there are certainly interesting teams or dynasties or different, you know, players that you might want to see, like LeBron, kind of mirroring what we're seeing with Tom Brady and the proposed documentary that's coming out on him, like, he's still playing. That would be weird. Like, you don't want a documentary covering everything about a player that's currently still in there. And nor can you get everybody to be as open and as frank. Like, you're not going to get a lot of his teammates or ex-teammates or even current ones talking about LeBron as openly as they should, the way that they did about Jordan, when they still have to see him in August or for training camp or things of that sort.
That's a really good point. And I'm not looking forward to the Tom. I'm not going to watch a minute of that Tom Brady one. That guy, no thanks. He was my least favorite part of the match on Sunday. I didn't care for Tom Brady. Anyway, personal preferences aside, but you're right with, like, the former players, there is such less politically at stake to talk openly about these things that it makes all. I remember Ryan Monte Ellis on my podcast a couple weeks ago on Locked On Warriors, and he was unbelievable, but he was only unbelievable because he was so candid and because he could afford to be candid. I mean,
yeah,
he's been out and he's living in Dallas right now, just doing his own thing, and that's it. And he was very just open about how he just felt betrayed by the Warriors when they traded him and why he thought they should have brought back the We Believe team, and about his upbringing and all these things. He was so honest about it. And it was so refreshing because, as you know, you talk to these guys and it's very practiced. It's very polished. It's all like it's really, when you get anything, it's a lot, right? Just because you so rarely get anything to work with. And with Monte Ellis, it was just 30 minutes of just candidness. And like, I'm not sure I'm ready for a 10-part documentary on Monte Ellis, but I think there is a certain amount of value added to guys being out of the league for a really long time. So that's a good point. So that kind of, you're able to frame it, because even I would watch a 10-part documentary on Dwayne Wade, but I don't know that he'd be ready to be as candid as, like, you know, somebody who played 30 years ago.
And having, you know, watched that documentary, you know, for covering The Last Dance and everything else, you know, up to, you know, most of his career, and there was some incredible footage there. It almost felt like there were parts that kind of wore a little thin. I don't know if you had a chance to actually see the documentary. So as great as that was, there were a lot of details there, and I think it still wasn't enough. Like, it has to be done and handled correctly. And I think it also, like, I think more importantly is that it can't just be about one player. As much as The Last Dance was about Jordan, I feel like it also covered an era, because you're not only are you talking about Jordan, but you're talking about the Bulls. You're talking about his opponents in North Carolina, his upbringing, various other players, like from Tony Kukoc to Jerry Krause to Dennis Rodman. You have to have characters. So, like, any one individual player, while they might be the driving focus of the documentary, they can't be the end all of that. It has to be about a team or something, an era more than anything else. And so when you're asking me what my personal favorite would be, I would have to say it's probably the Showtime era. Like, I feel like that, and I think that there's something already in the works, because I've read Jeff Perlman's book and I know how interesting that whole era was. But from the kind of parties that would take place, like, basically like swingers parties in the Forum discotheque, like, there was a club at the Forum that was the hottest club in all of Los Angeles after Lakers games, and where you have guys like Magic Johnson and the owner of the team, Dr. Jerry Buss, and all the players kind of like saying to their wives, no, I'm not going to the club afterwards, or else they're risking divorce. Like, those are the kind of nuances about a team that could be so exciting. You're talking about LA in the 80s, so you're talking about sex, cocaine, eventually the HIV virus, but you're also talking about the Encore product with James Worthy and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Magic Johnson, all of whom are still alive. But you also have Kurt Rambis, AC Green, all these different players that were there with the Lakers during this great era, continuing on from the late 70s up into the early 90s. And there's so much about that team that could be so fascinating. And then, yeah, you have the matchups with the Pistons. You have the matchups with Larry Bird and the Celtics. You have Dr. J. And thankfully, again, some of these players are all alive and able to come out and actually talk about these eras. And it's kind of in that sweet spot when I was thinking about it, is where the players are still alive. They're still current enough where you can say, oh, I know who Magic is. I know who Kareem is. You're not talking about, you know, George Mikan and the Minneapolis Lakers or anything like that. Although I would find that interesting. It's in the right sweet spot of, like, it just happened close enough, recently enough, so that you can still have some connection to it, but far back enough so that you can just kind of sit back and go, oh, yeah, now I can have an opportunity to be as open as I want to. So to me, it'd be either the Showtime Lakers or, conversely, since there's already something in the works about the Lakers, the 80s Celtics. Like, I think the combination of Bill Walton, Larry Bird, Kevin McHale, and Robert Parrish, along with all the different players that were on that squad, I think that would be such an interesting what if there, and kind of going into what it was like playing in Boston, and, you know, kind of being a very different team than the Showtime Lakers, but being just as good, if not one of the best teams in NBA history.
Yeah, I think you hit on a perfect thing there too. It's about the era, right? Because not only if you did the Showtime Lakers and all these things, you've got Los Angeles in the 80s. Like, come on, you got Hollywood in the 80s. Let's go. Right. That's a great setting for all these things to take place. You've got, you know, Larry Bird versus Magic Johnson, the rivalry that basically saved the NBA. You can, just like in The Last Dance, you can, yeah, maybe it's about this individual season or this individual team or whatever it might be, but you can do the whole back and forth for added context. Like, why was the NBA failing? What was it about Magic and versus Larry that was so important and saved the NBA? You can get into the race relations. You can get into the sociopolitical dynamic. Like, all these things that are very interesting in a documentary setting. Like, that to me is and there's been stuff done on Magic and Larry Bird. There's been 30 for 30s. There's been documentaries about them and those as individuals in general. But if you want to, the reason I framed it as a 10-part documentary is because there's just so much context. There's so much you can add to that and so much of a different level you can get with all that stuff, that as important as Michael Jordan was, and that documentary got The Last Dance got into a lot of just not Michael Jordan, but that era and why he was so important for the NBA and how he changed the NBA. You could basically just do the same thing with the 80s and tie it to Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, Lakers, Celtics. But like you said, you've got so many great characters that come into play. You've got and they can all make their own cameos. And it would just be really – so, like, to me, it's not no question. And it is that sweet spot where those guys are still alive. They've been removed from the game long enough that they're willing to be candid. And they have been candid. You know, we've heard Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, these guys talk about it before. So that's the next one. I would watch all of them. They could do a 10-part series on that too. I'd be all in. But and I don't even know that you need the exclusive video. I actually, in The Last Dance, like, the only exclusive video that I really cared about was just stuff of Michael Jordan in practice being a jerk. And then that, like, those Space Jam pickup games, which they only had like 7 minutes of. So, like, of all the other, like, you know,
oh, the All-Star footage where he's really talking about Kobe, that was a good
one. Yeah, that was a good one too. So, but I don't think you need that sort of stuff to make it. Like, you can make the documentary for the sake of making the documentary. All right. Well, that's all we have today. Remember to listen to and subscribe to Locked On NBA on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you have some time, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. When you get done here, you can tell your smart device to play the latest episode of any other Locked On Network show, including Rejecting the Screen. Thanks for listening. Please stay safe.